I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio. And you're listening to episode number 171 of the Functional Nerds Podcast. And John?
Yes?
To the bat pole.
Oh.
Chum.
Pole. That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, he's a blogger, and a...
That was kind of cool.
And a podcast dude. He is a Hugo winner as well for the SF Signal website. You can check out his website. Yeah. At ATF. Now he's evolved totally into Beavis and Butthead stuff. His website is atfmb.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at atfmb. I'm always going to get through it, Patrick. You can't stop me. You can't stop me. Actually, you stop me all the time, but I'm going to get through it anyway.
You can't stop the signal, Mal.
No, man, you can't. You cannot. I am John Anelio. I am a singer-songwriter and a composer. You can check out my music over at my website, johnanelio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at johnanelio. Today, we are delighted to be joined by Jamie Wyman. After a misspent adulthood pursuing a music education degree, I know that well, Jamie has fostered several interests before discovering that being an author means never having to get out of her pajamas. As an author, Jamie's favorite playgrounds are urban fantasy, horror, and creepy carnival settings. When she's not traipsing about with her imaginary friends, she lives in Phoenix with two hobbits and two cats. She's proud to say she has a deeply disturbed following at her blog. Jamie, thank you for joining us this afternoon. How are you doing?
It's awesome to be here with technical problems and all.
yeah, we're experiencing some technical difficulty. Hopefully by the time... By the time you
it's my rock of the computer, yeah.
Yeah, and Patrick, I think, just put a cat up on
the screen. I didn't do anything.
Screen.
I have no idea where the cat came from.
Oh, wow. There's a cat up on the screen for Jamie. That's there's like a cat. Do you say GIF or GIF or what do you say? There's none of this debate about that. What do you
choosy moms choose GIF. Let's go with that one.
Very good. So we are delighted to have
Daddy, look.
It's funny.
Yeah. So that's my.
That's
son.
One of the rare. Yeah, that's one of the rare.
He's done that like twice, and it was we're having the technical difficulties today, and my son runs in with
that's
that.
Okay. You know, it's funny. Yeah. There was one time that John's son came in, and John looked at him and said, "You know, I'm talking to Patrick. Do you want to say hello to him?" And I just hear this, "No." And I also have the Princess Scientist over on Mer Lafferty's podcast, who will occasionally crash a podcast episode when I'm editing them. And there's one that just still sticks with me to this day. You know, she comes bursting in with the dog and they're talking and she's like, you know, I'm recording. And the Princess Scientist says, oh, sorry, Patrick. And it was just hilarious. Anyway, so that's fine, John. So anyway, Jamie, welcome.
Hi.
How's it going?
Jim?
It's going. I got myself some chai, and I'm excited because you guys are awesome. I like listening to you guys.
Thank you.
Well, that's two listeners in the past couple or two guests who have been listeners, or at least they're lying really well and saying they're listeners. That's cool. I'm down with that. Hey, you can lie. There's nothing wrong with that.
I the one that really got me was the back and forth about Into Darkness. That you guys were, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. you guys were having, I think, with Wes.
Oh, yeah, it was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's funny that you mentioned that because I was at this event in New York this past week, and I was talking to a couple of the publicists that work at some of the various science fiction publishers, and I was saying, like, oh, yeah, you know, we record the show, and it's a lot tighter now than it used to be. And I'm like, except for a recent episode with Wesley Chu where we were done recording, and he announces at the end, oh, by the way, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. sucks. And then it was another 20 minutes debating that, well, which is how our show used to be.
Yeah, and did you see the Netflix announcement?
Oh, about the Marvel, they're going to do just, like, straight Netflix shows?
Yeah, so Daredevil... Luke Cage, which is Power Man, Iron Fist,
and Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones, and then they're gonna do 13 episode runs of each of those, and then at the end they're gonna do a mini series bringing them all together as the new Defenders.
Nice.
Yeah, I saw that and I was excited because, you know, we've talked quite a bit about, I'm a big Netflix fan and, you know, I'm really enjoying their original content. And I think on IO9, they wrote a nice article about it where they were just saying like how this is better than you'd think. And it's really win-win for everybody because it gives Netflix all of this original content. And it's great for Marvel because they're not going to make a Luke Cage movie or an Iron Fist movie, most likely not going to. And really, they're not even going to be able to sell something like that to ABC because they're kind of two second-tier characters, you know. And
I'm going to say, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I think a Iron Fist television series would be a very good show. I mean, they could mm-hmm. do the Kwai Chain King Kung Fu kind of thing with him, mm-hmm. and I think mm-hmm. that could really work. But we'll see what they do.
Yeah, but it's very exciting because they're going to roll it all together, and I'm sure there'll be promotions up to the new movies, and I imagine you'll end up seeing maybe some of these characters make small appearances in the bigger movies that come out, and we're living in a golden age for this kind of stuff.
But that's enough about Netflix and Marvel. How about Jamie?
Okay. Yeah. So, Jamie, you know, I know you have a book coming out, and by the time this airs, it should just be out, so can maybe tell us a little bit about your book.
It is Wildcard, and it is about Catherine Sharp, who is a tech girl. She's, you know, code monkey and IT guru, who we could have really used earlier today. but her soul belongs to Eris, the Greek goddess of discord. And she finds out rather quickly that Eris has bargained her soul as a bet in a poker game with the other trickster gods. So if Kat wants to get it back, she's got to get in on the action and try and battle wits with the likes of Loki and Puck and Coyote. Cool. And, of course, Eris.
Now, who's putting the book out? Who's publishing the book, Jamie?
It's going to be Edge, which is an imprint of Entangled Publishing.
Very cool. You know, and it's interesting.
Edge.
Yeah.
I met them at conventions.
Now, Jamie, you know, it's interesting. Jamie and I have been social media friends for quite a while, and I sort of saw Jamie and Delilah S. Dawson talking one day, and, you know, I didn't realize Jamie had a book coming out, and I'm like, oh, that's cool, because Jamie is pretty good with the social media and wasn't just beating people's heads over with, I got a book. She's actually a human being, and when I discovered that she had a book, I'm like, oh, well, she should come on the show then. So,
I am a real person. I'm not a bot. I'm not shilling stuff constantly, and I don't have the bikini selfie, so I'm not like bot spamming people.
I did for a while, and then found out that it turned people off. So
really, that's surprising.
Yeah. Well, you've never seen me in a bikini. So.
Maybe tell us a little bit about what you were chatting about with Delilah that day, because we had Delilah on the show, and we found her to be quite delightful.
I love her.
I heart her. Yeah. She is so cool.
So I don't want to say, because I think I know what you were talking about, but I don't know if you want to put that out there with her, because I think she was reading your book, if I'm correct.
It's not a secret, so it's cool to talk about. She was kind enough to do a blurb for Wildcard. So she had read it, and I didn't know what she thought. She just tweeted to me that she thought it was amazeballs and totally made my day. I ran around the house squeeing like a, you know, banshee on ecstasy when I saw that. It was awesome.
And she just got another book deal, which is awesome as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm totally excited to see what else she comes up with. Just got done reading Carny Punk, and the story she put in that was spectacular. I loved it.
And this really goes to show kind of the power of social media, because like I said, Jamie and I have been friends for a while, and I knew she was a writer, but I didn't know she was that sort of far along in her writing career, you know. So I'm like, well, Delilah's gonna blurb, like that's kind of a big deal, that's cool, and like I'm like, oh, you should come on the show then, like, you know. So I don't know, but again, be a real person.
Yep.
All you got to do to get on a Midland level podcast like this is be friends with the host for like 3 or 4 years and then one day casually mention, and then, you know, you two could, you know, get the promotional benefits of the Functional Nerds.
So, John, are you saying that constantly hammering you with emails and messages and tweets to be on the show is not an effective way of getting on?
I would say it's not the best strategy to take. I would say with most people in general, like, you know, I don't know. I don't even want to get into it, but it's just basically, I don't think what we do is a big deal. I think we're very loose. I think we have a good time. I think hopefully a service that we provide for the community is we help people find cool new authors and other creative folks to maybe check out. And if they sell a couple books, I'm really happy about that. But it's not like we have any huge power. And sometimes people approach us, well, I can only speak for myself, and like as if we have some sort of big power over the world, and we don't. You know, we have some listeners who buy books. And if you sell some books, I'm very happy about that, but it's not going to change your life just being on our show. And if so, I don't mean to be so like, oh, don't bother. Like, I like when people bother me. It's fine. But, like, let's have a little bit of a relationship before you,
hammer to be honest. I don't think I have any power over the world either, Mr. Wayne.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't know. It's like, I ask people all the time to be on the show because we goof off on Twitter for a while. And I don't know. It's like, I don't know. If you're like a human being, I'll probably just ask you because, I don't know. That's what we do. We talk, we hang out.
Anytime I think I have any sort of power, I just send John Scalzi an invite to the podcast. And that sets me straight.
He said no, huh?
Oh, he didn't even say no anymore. Now at this point, it just goes in the junk filter and I never hear back. It used to be like the first time it was no, a very polite no. I'm super busy writing right now. I don't have the time. Check with me later. The next time it was a publicist response. No, John's really busy writing right now. Try with us later. The third time it was a publicist response and it was kind of like, huh? And now there's just nothing. So that really sets you in your place, yeah.
Well, wait till you guys win the Hugo for the podcast next year. Yeah. Then they'll come crawling back, I tell you.
And I was thinking, if I did win and I was up on stage, that would be the perfect time to ask him. Because it would be kind of like, it's kind of like proposing marriage on the Jumbotron. She can't say no.
Oh, you can. Uh-huh. I've seen it. It's bad. It is bad news when people say no. But Jamie, thank you for coming on the show, and I'm very excited that you have a book coming out and Delilah's blurbing it, and it's sort of like, hey, one of my friends, they're doing cool stuff, cool. You know, so I'm really happy for you, and I wish you the best of luck with that. So give the name of the book again and when it's coming out.
It's about Kat Sharp, who is fighting for her soul against a bunch of trickster gods, one of whom is Eris, who has bet her soul in a game of poker.
Very cool. And when does it come out?
November 25th.
Awesome.
Very, very cool. All right. Well, let us get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Jamie, why don't you go first with your pick this week?
My pick is Carny Punk. I mentioned it earlier. It features a story by Delilah Dawson. It is an awesome anthology that is Dark Circus, and it features like Kevin Hearn, Delilah Dawson, Allison Pang, Shauna McGuire, just amazing stories.
Very cool.
Very cool. Yeah, and that's out already right now?
Yeah, that came out, I think, July or August. I just finished it last week. It's spectacular, especially if you're into creepy circus.
Well, what other kind of circus is there? Very cool. That's great. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
I am going to go with The Blacklist on NBC.
I don't know.
Oh, that looks so good.
Yes, James Spader. He is a guy who is very bad, and he's done bad things, and he is an actual enemy of the United States. He's listed. And for whatever reason, he comes back, and he walks right into the federal building in the very first few minutes, and he says, I'm here to see somebody, and he hands him his ID. They look him up. They're like, holy crap, everybody surrounds him. They put him in a cage with like people pointing guns at him because he's such a bad guy, and he's like, I want to talk to FBI agent blah, 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 and she's the only one I'll talk to. And he basically makes a deal saying, I will show you, I will help you get the worst people on your top most wanted worldwide criminal lists off the streets, but I will only talk to her and I will only work with her. And it's all this stuff about figuring out why her. know, why is he doing this? And it's very intense. It's very, very good stuff. And he is so smooth in this, James Spader. It's just, you got to start watching it.
Cool. Voice of Ultron. yeah.
Well, before that, he was Daniel Jackson. So.
Oh yes, I know. I just watched the Stargate movie about a month ago up on Netflix, and I hadn't seen it in a long time, and it was good. It's I like the show better, but yeah, it's solid.
He was also awesome on Boston Legal.
Loved him on Boston Legal.
Yeah, him.
Play between him and Shatner was fantastic.
Him and Shatner, and him and Rhona Mitra.
Yes.
Yeah. I remember an episode opening where he was dressed as Batman, she was dressed as Robin, and they were being arrested.
I missed that one.
Oh, cool. For indecent exposure or something like that they did. I don't know.
Yeah. Very cool. My pick this week is an album. It is called Echoes from the Underground, and it is by Vertical Horizon. You may remember Vertical Horizon from, I don't know when they had hits, 10 years ago maybe. I don't even know if it's that long yet, but they had a song called Everything You Want and You're a God and a bunch of hits, you know, kind of the very indicative of the time. And I actually saw Vertical Horizon live back when that album was out. And they were a great live band, a really surprisingly good live. I forget, it was a couple of different bands on the bill that night. And really enjoyed them. And, you know, I've always gone back and listened to that first album. And because I use Spotify, I was in the mood to listen to them. And I put them in and noticed that they actually had a new album out from the past year. And I've been listening to it. And it's great. It's just as good as that original album that they put out. And I just loved it. I think it's a really good album. It's called Echoes from the Underground. Matt Scannell is the singer, songwriter, guitar player in it. And it's heavy. There's some heavy guitar stuff on it, some cool solos, but just a really good kind of pop rock album, good hooks, good melodies, just a really cool album. And I'm really digging it. So once again, it's Echoes from the Underground, and it is by Vertical Horizon.
Very cool.
Well, let's move on to our main topic. Our main topic this week is music, because one of the reasons why Jamie and I have been friends on social media is because Jamie's a musician herself. Actually, studied music education, and if longtime listeners of the show will know that I am a music teacher during the day, and I thought it'd be fun to talk a little bit about that, a little bit about how you go about learning music and how that impacts other artistic pursuits. So, Jamie, what specifically did you study when you were working on your music education degree, or your music degree, I should say?
I was a percussionist. I started when I was about 11, doing drumline stuff. Mm-hmm. And I did high school drumline, did college drumline, was really into it. Auditioned for Blue Man Group when I was in my 20s.
All right, you gotta tell that story.
Yeah.
Is there anything more to that?
All right. So the way the Blue Man Group audition is, it's like a big open cattle call kind of thing where everybody just shows up, you're in line, and you go into the theater, and somebody who's actually a member of the Blue Man Group will actually take you through your passes and, you know, like drum with you and see how good you are. And I was a fan of Blue Man Group, and I had a couple DVDs, and I'd seen them before. And I go in, and I'm the first person in line. And when the first person in line at the Blue Man Group audition has 2X chromosomes, that gets a little bit of notice. So they took me, as soon as I like filled out, you have to fill out your resume. As soon as I filled out my resume and everything, I handed it in, and they took me back outside, and they said, there's this news crew that wants to talk to you, since, you know, you're a girl. I'm like, gee, thanks. So I talked to them for a little bit, and then we went back in for the actual audition. My idol, who's one of the Blue Man Group, his name is Eric Gabeau. He was in Chicago at the time. Now, I think last time I heard, he was playing in Japan with their new show there. But he's on stage with two pair of sticks and a practice pad, and it's my freaking idol is going to run me through my paces on the stage of the Briar Street Theater in Chicago. So I'm like trying not to freak out, and it was so freaking awesome because we ended up drumming like just stroke for stroke. because again, my background is in drumline, so you have to look uniform. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he and I just drum stroke for stroke. We were like one drummer for a little bit, and some guy as another performer was in the audience watching, and he called us out on something. He's like, "That's not the song you're supposed to be doing." And both of us just like swing our heads to the audience, same motion, same movement, same time, and our sticks didn't change at all.
That's awesome.
But I coasted through the music part. It was just amazing. They were like, "Yeah, you're coming back tomorrow for the acting part, right?" Like, absolutely. Show up the next day and just woo.
Now, I'm curious, was Tobias there from Arrested Development?
No, he was not. I was a little disappointed that I didn't see him there in all his blue painted glory.
Bluebearing, I haven't seen it in years. I'd seen it twice. I saw it in a tiny theater in New York 15 years ago, 20, I don't know, a long time ago. And they were really cool because they had, like, at the time, they had, like, a in addition to the guys on stage, they had guys in, they were above the stage. It was sort of like a pit band. And I just remember they had, like, all this fluorescent stuff on. But it was really cool because, like, one guy was, I think they had another drummer up there and like a keyboard player and a bass player or something, but they had a guy playing Chapman's stick, which is that instrument that, it's like part guitar, part bass, and it's like a flat fretboard and you tap on it, and just really cool music, just like really innovative, I love the Bluebearing Group, and it's a head trip too. It's not just a music thing, as if people aren't aware of it. It's very surreal in a lot of ways. I just remember like they end up dumping toilet paper on you in the crowd by the end of the show. At least the show that I saw, it was just like you're in a sea of toilet paper by the end of the show. It was a very bizarre, but very, very cool.
Why do I remember, did they do a version of the Doctor Who theme song on PVC pipe?
I'm not sure if that's them doing it is the thing, because I've heard that version, and I don't think it's actually Bluebearing Group. I could be wrong, and I'm saying this on the internet here for everybody to prove me wrong.
And my memory is not great, but I seem to remember it.
I've heard a version like it, and my husband and I, every time we watch Doctor Who, he's like, "I want Bluebearing Group to cover this," and because it would sound so awesome on their PVC instrument, but I really want to hear it with the Chapman stick. Doing the melody on top, because that would just be freaking amazing.
Yeah, now... Oh, keep going.
Yeah, I don't know if they did that.
Monster Tubulum did it.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. Jamie, you were saying you did drumline stuff. Did you also do like the mallet instruments, like the various xylophones and stuff like that?
I did. I did xylophones, mallets, mostly marimba.
Okay.
Mostly that was for my studies. That was for my percussion lessons and stuff like that. What I loved playing, other than being in drumline, was timpani.
Cool.
That was my thing. I did the orchestra and symphonic bands in high school and college, and I love playing timpani. I miss it. That's of all the things I ever played, I miss timpani the most.
Not a lot of people know this about me, but when I went to college, however brief that was, I actually did want to get into music and into drumming, but they didn't have a finger drumming course.
You'd be surprised. They have some. They have lots of stuff in school. Jamie, I had.
I don't know.
I had lots of percussion friends when I was in college, and one thing that none of the percussionists wanted to do this one gig, which was it was a performance of Haydn's Toy Symphony, which I don't know if you've ever heard or played in that before, but the Toy Symphony is like, there's an orchestra there playing away, and this was like at a performance in a church, and the percussion parts are there's all these different drum things in it, but then there's one part is a bird whistle, and the other part is toy drum and toy trumpet. And so none of the percussionists actually wanted to do this gig because it was kind of beneath them, I guess.
Yeah. I'm kind of twitching just hearing about it.
So my roommate who was a biology major but played flute in college but could read music, could like count and so he played the bird whistle part, and I played the toy drum and toy trumpet part because we could both just read. You didn't have to make a good sound. I mean, if anything, making a bad sound was actually good. But I just remember being in a tuxedo with my college roommate in front of this orchestra and me having like a stupid toy trumpet like in my mouth and like this toy drum going and just my roommate, you know, intensely counting, you know, as he had to hold out the bird whistle for like, you know, whole notes tied together for 8 measures going, just like hold and, yeah, and our tux is doing it. So I guess a lot of percussionists don't look at that as a cool gig, but we did it. So
there's a couple things. First off, I do want to acknowledge just for our listeners that we have switched up how we are talking to Jamie because we were having technical difficulties. So if you noticed a switch in sound, it's because we went with cell phone. Number two, when I first bought a guitar, I also bought lessons to learn how to play the guitar. And on my second lesson, I think it was, I went in and the guy asked me if I'd been practicing, and I said yes. And he said, "And have you learned how to play anything?" And I said, "Yes, I learned how to play the theme song to Mad About You on the guitar." And he said, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, I'd love to hear it." And I said, "Okay." And so I start doing all the tuning of the guitar. You know how that goes. You know, and I'm turning the guitar. And I'm sitting there and I strum it a couple times. And I said, "Are you ready?" He says, "Yes." I flipped the guitar over and I went. Tell me why. I love you like I do. And I just went into that. And he sat there red-faced, like pissed at me. I thought it was funny.
I would have laughed, Patrick. As a teacher, I would have laughed. I would have laughed. I don't know. That's. But, you know, I love the mallet stuff. I love marimba. I feel like those are underused instruments. I wish I heard more of them, particularly if you orchestrate it well. Frank Zappa is probably the guy that used those the most in sort of a modern setting. But I can never get enough of that stuff. I wish more people played it and wish more people used them.
There's a piece by a composer named Michael Dougherty. He does a lot of pop culture type thematic music. One of the pieces he did is called Shaken, Not Stirred. Mm-hmm. And he did this back in the 90s. It was a percussion ensemble, 4 players, all of them in tuxes, and it included a vibraphone, marimba, water glasses, and a bunch of other tracks. And it was James Bond's music,
all spread
around on these different instruments. And each of the players represented at the time, the 4 actors who played Bond.
Cool.
And throughout it, you know, there's some spoken word where they're all rhythmically shaking, you know, saying shaken, not stirred, or, you know, shake, 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 you know, kind of stuff like that. It was a really awesome performance piece.
So cool. Do you love that movie Drumline?
I hated the movie. The only part of that movie I liked was where they're giving the girl crap while they're doing push-ups, and she just glares and starts doing one-armed push-ups.
What about Bear McCreary? Do you like all the drum stuff that he does?
I'm sorry, who?
Bear McCreary.
He's the composer for Battlestar Galactica, so if you're familiar with the Battlestar Galactica music, do you like all the drum stuff in that?
I do. The other one I love is, and the name escapes me, was the Crouching Tiger soundtrack.
Oh my god,
so good.
Yes.
You know, Patrick often brings up Bear McCreary and his drums. Bear's doing the music for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I haven't heard a lot of drums in that, Patrick.
But I'm also not digging the music on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's one of the things that I think they need to change dramatically.
It's a little...
It's cheesy 70s music.
It kind of is.
I'm a little behind on it. I actually watched the 3rd episode this morning, so I've got about 3 or 4 more episodes to catch up on. So I haven't studied the music too much, but I do know that Bear does it, and I noticed it. I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of drums in this. So
yeah, my complaint about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been the music, and most people have gone, wait, that's your complaint?
Yeah, I know. I've only 3 episodes in. And it's not what I expected.
Episode 6 is awesome.
They just delivered their best episode last night or the night before.
Yeah. The episode 6, I think it was called Zzzt, F-Z-Z-T.
Yep.
That one was by far the best of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, I look forward to sort of catching up with that. But Jamie, you know, what I want to ask you now is, you know, so you have this background in music, and but now you're a writer and you're going to publish. So is there any relationship at all between your experience as a musician and your experience as a writer?
Lots, actually, and not just in a, you know, the rejection aspect of things. You know, always honing your craft, you know, that's definitely a part of it. You know, being a musician, you learn how to practice and, you know, build those muscles up and build muscle memory and include your, or make your skill set evolve. You do the same thing when you're a writer. But for me, it's more of the biggest connection I see between my musicianship and my writing is rhythm. You kind of learn a flow of how to tell a story when you're playing music. You don't have words, but you learn a flow. There's definitely a structure. You learn about, you know, dynamics and hold and release and tension. And I think the same thing can be done with, can carry over to storytelling.
It's interesting that you bring up dynamics because for people that don't know that term in music, dynamics are the range of how loud or how soft you're playing. And unfortunately, I think particularly in modern music and the way that modern music is recorded, which is incredibly compressed and limited, and the dynamic range, when you hear, you've probably heard that before, the dynamic range is what's the difference between the loudest sound and the softest sound. And in the advent of radio and everything else, they wanted to bring those two closer together. And Patrick has talked about it on the show. One of the things that he uses to produce our podcast is a plugin called Levelator. And Levelator is a compressor, basically, amongst other things. And it makes the louder parts a little softer, it makes the softer parts a little louder, and kind of evens it out. Because when you're listening to this on headphones, especially in the beginning, my sound was much louder than Patrick's, and it would just like blow his away. And so you don't want that. You want everything to be a more even level. And unfortunately, with music, they've done that too, and everything is sort of the same level. But really, to experience music, which is one of the reasons I think people still love live music, is there is that range of dynamics of that, you know, we're going to be a little soft here for a while, and then, you know, then we're going to get louder. And it seems so basic, right? You know, it just seems like such a basic thing. And it's like, well, why have we sort of lost that in music? Why have we sort of lost that dynamic range?
And what's the term, John, when you're playing the piano for softer versus louder? You know, stronger versus light touching on the keys.
The Italian word is piano is soft. Piano means soft, and forte means loud. And there's
forte,
a whole range.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Forte is loud, piano soft.
Yes.
You know, there's a whole range. There's a mezzo piano, which is medium soft, and mezzo forte, which is medium loud, and fortissimo, which is very loud, and pianissimo, which is very soft. Which these markings are: F is for forte, P is for piano, M F is for mezzo forte, and PP is for pianissimo. And let me tell you, when you're trying to teach 9 and 10 year olds about pianissimo and they see PP, it's just always like, PP. I never say PP. I'm like, you'll notice the double P here. I never say PP. I always say the double P for that. But it is so, that range.
So, John, if you were in a 2-2, number two, and you were having a PP?
Yes, it's quite a conundrum. But that's where, Patrick, that's where the name of the piano comes from, because the piano as an instrument is a fairly modern instrument compared, like the earlier keyboard instruments were the harpsichord and the clavichord and instruments like that. And when the piano was invented, it was called the forte piano, meaning when you press down soft on the keys, it would sound soft. And when you press harder on the keys, it would play loud. And that was a big technological advancement. So they call it the forte piano, and eventually they just shortened it to piano. So when you're looking at a piano, it is the soft. It's the worst name for an instrument ever.
And some of the first Casio keyboards couldn't do that. that just had the one tone. You pushed it, and you got the song, and that was it.
Yeah, and so to get back to, I think, what Jamie was talking about with that is, I imagine as a writer, you can't just always have guns blazing the whole time because you have nowhere to go with it. So is that kind of what you're talking about in terms of dynamics, Jamie?
Yeah, you have a push and pull in your story, and it's very ebb and flow. So you always want to shape it. When, you know, with music, I remember every single rehearsal, you know, your director is telling, you know, hey, flutes, I want you to shape this line more, you know, give it more texture, more contour, you know, with their dynamic. And I think when you're writing, you need to do the same kind of shaping, you know, choose your moments and build up to them. And sometimes it's the quiet, peaceful moments between your guns blazing scenes that can have the most poignant moments. And they build contrast. They make the guns blazing bigger.
It's what, when I'm teaching my students, it's what I always try to impart on them is that, look, if we just play super loud all the time, it doesn't mean anything anymore. It's just loud. Like, the loud is supposed to have an impact, and you need to play soft sometimes for that loud to mean anything.
Exactly. And, we heard that so much in drumline. It's because we're drummers. We beat drum, you know, we're animal. beat drum. And, you know, we want to play everything as if it's fortissimo, but, you know, you can't do that. And that's part of why I loved timpani so much, is because you really got that contrast. Because you would play soft and just, like, pull the sound out of it. And then there's, you know, your moments where you get to do the, you know, 2001, boom, 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 as loud as you possibly can. But, it means nothing. The loud spaces mean nothing if you don't have something to contrast it with.
Yeah. Now, you know, one kind of final question in terms of the relationship between writing and music. So, in your current book, or in do you have any? Do you draw on your experience as a musician? I mean, do you have any characters that are musical? Do you have, you know, any sort of little musical inside things in your books?
Actually, my main character in this series, her name is Catherine Sharp. And so her initials are C sharp.
Oh, nice.
And the series, I'm eventually going to have this. This is going to be a 5-book series, I hope. Knock on something wooden. And the series is called Etudes in C Sharp. She is a computer tech girl. C Sharp is a computer language.
Nice.
Yep.
And when she works, she doesn't really realize it's just one of those things that, you know, she'll hum. And that does come into play in later books where, you know, the musicality of her, you know, while she works, she's not a musician. And yet when she works, she sings or hums. And that does kind of come into play later. But it's just this kind of double entendre of it's a language in computing, it's a language in music. And yes, that will come into play later, not so much in book one, though.
Very cool. Very. I mean, obviously, I'm always going to be a sucker for any time there's music used in it. Maybe my favorite fantasy series of books, or amongst them, are the Elizabeth Hayden books, because there is
Rhapsody.
She's a music. Yeah, the Rhapsody books, which I know you weren't into.
No,
but,
I didn't like them at all.
Yeah, I loved them, and that's what drew me to that. That's what kind of got me into reading fantasy, is those books, because they had the music element to it, and I thought she handled that quite well.
And I liked Modisette's Soprano Sorceress series. So
that I have to read, because I heard those are great too, and I really want to read those. And
music is magic. If you are a singer, you have magic. If you can get people who can play perfectly every single time, they can add to your magic. If they're off, the spell is off, and bad things can happen. If you can sing a duet with someone else, you can be the most powerful sorcerer in the world. That's kind of the rules.
Yeah.
But the sorcerers don't want to be, they don't want to share, they don't want to sing together, because the flip side is you can also do the most harm and damage by singing duets.
That's really cool. And I think Elie Modisette's wife is an opera singer?
She is, yes. She was part of the inspiration for it.
That's really cool. I gotta get about to reading those. But cool. Well, I think, I don't know, because we've had so many difficulties. I don't know where we are time-wise with things, but that feels kind of like a nice place to sort of start wrapping things up. So once again, Jamie Wyman, thank you for joining us. Why don't you throw out your website and your Twitter and the name of your book one more time so our listeners can check all that stuff out.
The book is Wildcard, and it comes out November 25th from Entangled Publishing. My website is really simple. It's www.jamiewyman.com. And you can find me on Twitter. The handle is BeGirlBlue.
BeGirlBlue. Very good. For me again, yeah, check out my music. It's over at johnanilio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And at the time of this recording, it should be coming up on... I'll be doing a performance in Princeton, New Jersey with Sarah Donner on December 13th. It's going to be like a little geeky holiday kind of show, so that should be fun. I'm really looking forward to that. And Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
So I had The Lightning Thief over at Kirkus. I should also have a review of East of West over on Kirkus from Image. And then SS Signal podcast, we're back to 2 a week. So we're being pretty consistent there, pushing out the interviews that I did at WorldCon every Thursday and new panels every Monday. So lots of cool things going on over there. And of course, you can always find me all things from my brain, ATFMB. That's me on Twitter, that's me on the web, and that's me on Facebook.
Very good. Jamie, once again, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
And everyone else, we'll see you next time.
I saw that coming. I saw the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
This is going to be a fun one to edit.
I'm sorry, man.
Oh, no. It's not. It's like I said, it's not anybody's fault. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. No, I know.
So I started a Trucks Tedeschi Band channel on Pandora.
Okay.
And it brought E.G. Knight up. Mm. And I remember seeing E.G. Knight play at Riverfest in Chattanooga back in like 2002. And making a note at that time, it's like, oh, I gotta find this person's music and own it. Yeah, I have to buy it. Mm-hmm. And then leaving Riverfest, completely forgot her name. Mm-hmm. And so Pandora has brought E.G. Knight back to me, and I'm like, yes.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Have you had the time to check out Sonny Landreth yet?
No.
That's the next one you got to check out.
I completely forgot, and I even wrote myself a note here. I've got it on a sticky note.
Yeah, definitely, definitely worth checking out. Up your alley, slide guitar, Louisiana, you know. Blues is much more varied than I think most people would think, and there's many offshoots, and you may have just heard one that doesn't appeal to you.
A lot of people think it's just all the harmonica kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Big Boss Man.
Oh, I really like the acoustic
Can't you
blues.
Hear me when I call.
Like I liked Stevie Ray, of course, but you know, then there was like a time when it was like everyone was sort of a Stevie Ray clone, and I didn't really appeal to me. Jamie, are you there?
No.
You know, that was not, you know, if it came on the radio, I might listen to it, but I never really bought any of those albums, and it really wasn't until I heard sort of that like acoustic folk kind of blues, like that stuff I love, which is sort of surprising because you would think it'd be the other way around. But I found even like the real old stuff to just be way different than I would have expected that to sound like. You know, I just always expected that sort of old acoustic folk just to be like, da, 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 you know, it's not. It's very, it's very like virtuoso, some of the playing on that, even the really old recordings, what they're doing on an acoustic is pretty amazing, not as like sort of, because you know, because they're playing on an old acoustic, it's not all bendy and stuff. It's like it's pretty crazy. Like the Robert Johnson stuff, you know, everyone is, I think most people are aware of those Robert Johnson recordings, but if you really listen to that, and of course that was recorded in, I don't know, the 30s, maybe earlier, I don't know, a long time ago, like one microphone in a hotel room.
It's very kind of,
it's like, it's not a good quality recording, but if you listen to the guitar playing on that, it's crazy how good that guitar playing is. And there's lots of examples like him. There's other guys like that I kind of got into. There's a guy named Blind Lemon Jefferson, who played on a 12 string and just did crazy stuff like that too. I mean, it was really very, very, a big Bill Brunzi is another one that I liked. And
they would do stuff to their guitars to make them sound different rather than, you know, try to.
Yeah. Well, they played acoustically, so there was no effects or anything like that. And, you know, and a lot of them played in alternate tunings or open tunings. And it was a lot of finger picking and, or hybrid picking where, you know, they're kind of plucking away the bass line and then playing melodies over the top. I mean, pretty crazy how good that stuff is and how kind of marginalized it becomes, because it sort of becomes a caricature of what we think blues are. But if you actually go and listen to those songs and those recordings, it's I think there's more there for people to dig through than I think people would realize.
Oh, and I was going to say the slide guitar was usually a beer bottle.
Oh, sometimes. Yeah.
Thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home.